Hello and welcome to a brand new series of Shachle, a program that hopes to explore all matters Manx, social, historic and linguistic. Shape up Carswell Mish. Sir Clare, Chach and Shaw, we look back on the events commemorating the 75th anniversary of the death of Archibald Knox and celebrate the contribution of one individual to the revival of the Manx language. And on the 50th anniversary of the Winter Hill disaster, we'll explore the impact of such a tragedy on an island community. Hoseach sa chlea nach, ta sin feddyn mach, tulliw mych iawn na cwysyn rechyd, da chawrycha, a chwegw leblin a jeg gys tri ffyd, dje bes dynia ta master na ffyr smwyd gwach jen elin. Ta hen er ofer Archibald Knox, da fel master yn ofer smwsgan sioel jen lingega. As to sly crail the dug a bree the cuse jen a cummach and smoosgan shoil jen glaishach elinen as curgeon. Jehania's jasan a chacht and shochai, chum sheshach the Archibald Knox elin vanin, clair je tachet and nernan son to fee yeen machiaun Knox. For sure goes jach cuse the lotusen machiaun bay as over a chumada, curliach lyorish curgeon kujach, turus bus jen log Knox, as jener blain oil and cheshach, as fan lorada quiridachoc an echter ein jen chesach Rennie McIntosh. Born in the Isle of Man in 1864, Archibald Knox is widely recognised as one of the world's top names in design, and his work now commands a very high price at auction. Although here in the island he's highly regarded for his watercolour paintings, it's his design work, much of which was carried out while working as a designer for Liberty, that he's renowned for. This year, to mark the 75th anniversary of the designer's death, the Isle of Man Archibald Knox Society arranged a weekend of events, including a talk by the director of the Rennie McIntosh Society, Stuart Robertson. Shachle spoke to Mr. Robertson and chairman of the Isle of Man Archibald Knox Society, Liam O'Neill, to find out how the weekend went, but started by asking why they thought Knox had become such a significant figure in modern times.
I think it's interesting to listen to the people who actually came over for the weekend, and some people came from, members came from London and Bristol and Glasgow, in fact, we have one member there, and to listen to their comments, because they were either aware of Knox's watercolours or of his metalwork designs for Liberties. But when we sort of walked around the Braddon graveyard and see all of the monuments that Knox actually designed, or we went and we visited the Book of Remembrance at St. Ninian's High School, and we saw the Deer's Cry at the Manx Museum, people were absolutely amazed at the versatility of this man, you know, that he worked. And I think one person commented on that really makes sense, his epitaph, the humble servant of God in the ministry of the beautiful, that his whole life was simply dedicated to his art. He never was married. He wouldn't have had time to get married.
Again, it's like Liam was saying, it's like getting an understanding of the artist, the scale of work that he created, and seeing what his involvement within the island. I think that was all quite a learning curve, you know, to go around the island to get a taste of Knox is, I think, a good description of it, and to kind of, I think these are sort of things, and it's all part of like a jigsaw puzzle. I think it's like artists, contemporaries, what we would say contemporaries of Charles Rennie McIntosh and other artists, and what they were doing, trying to unravel some social history elements in what they were doing, and it's trying to get to know what the person was like. I think people are quite fascinated, and because maybe there isn't diaries, there isn't information, you're hoping that certain information will come to the fore, and the weekend's a kind of an eye-opener for people. And I think there's a great growth in cultural tourism. I think that's an area which is starting to develop. People are very much keen to spend time to go behind the scenes and find out things. I think the weekend was a great taster, and it was great work by Liam and all the efforts he's put in. And I know how hard it is to do all these sort of things.
With an opportunity for me taking up, Stuart, on what you mentioned there about cultural tourism, I actually had an opportunity to speak to the Minister for Culture and Tourism, Mr. Earnshaw, and he's very much aware of the importance of cultural tourism for the Isle of Man, and I think our society will probably be doing some work with the tourism board in the future. This was an experiment from my point of view, and we've got a lot to learn from this, and this is why I'm so delighted that Stuart came over, because they've been doing Macintosh trails for quite a number of years now, and he's giving us very, very valuable advice indeed. So we've got to sit back now and take stock. The response from everybody, and it was completely booked out, the bus was full, and all of the comments were excellent. And the people who came from abroad thought it was wonderful. And I think it is something. I think it should be done on a regular basis. I was just talking to Stuart, it would be an ideal time to do the next one, would possibly be in TT week, when we have so many visitors to the island. And that would be an opportunity to promote cultural tourism here, because people are always looking for something to do on the days that they're not racing or whatever. Especially if they've come back for numerous occasions to the Isle of Man.
I think it's developing the sort of infrastructure. I think that's the key in it's providing quality. And I think things that I was talking to Liam about was a joined up thinking within the island and getting the tourism, getting the businesses, getting restaurants, all everything to work together so that you've got a quality product. I think that's very much a key factor. But you've got elements here that you can make happen.
Director of the Rennie Macintosh Society, Stuart Robertson, and Chairman of the Isle of Man Archibald Knox Society, Liam O'Neill. And if you missed any of those events but would still like to find out more about Archibald Knox, visit archibaldknoxsociety.com. That's archibaldknoxsociety, all one word, .com, where you'll find details of all the Society's activities, including an exhibition of Knox's work at the Manx Museum. And we'll be hearing more about that in next week's Chachlay. Jew Shane Jail Le Bleeners died, J Fair Jane a Crach and Smether, Henkriu er an Ashun Vanning, so feedu heed blame. For Queg Fear Jeg as feed, for Cochonal Trishdelel Glaes Janach and Elian, Marowich, Treren and Etlan, Vadon, Forad Gus Perte Manquin, Smorshal, Ons K Chu, er Winter Hill, Fagus de Cron Chelvish. Doot, Lorada na Keres feed, Egatreshen, Joseph Qualtro, De beech alé, cúniat rish fóda snellion, maja dain dú. Ach, fe daid blain rosh de reiltis elion vanin cor enna igoil, ed nev va cailt egan elion, lesh liak cúniachti va salsith mach ons pöte runas vai, sa vlein naichia jeg, kefid as hoch jeg. As we've been hearing on the news, today marks the 50th anniversary of the Winter Hill disaster. On the 27th of February, 1958, the island suffered its worst loss of life in a commercial air crash when a Manchester-bound Silver City flight, travelling from the Isle of Man, crashed on the moors in thick mist, yards from the Winter Hill television mast. Only 7 people survived the accident, in which 35 Manx residents on a motor trade business trip were killed. Manx journalist Terry Kringle has reported on some of the biggest news stories to touch the Isle of Man during his 60-year career. And although he wasn't working in the island at the time, it was a story which he followed closely. The loss of life was felt very keenly by everyone on and from the Isle of Man. But what is the social impact of a tragedy like this on an island community such as ourselves?
And I was a little concerned to think that there was an aircraft flying 1,000 feet below me in what might well be instrument conditions, in the fairly immediate vicinity of some very high ground and this new television mast. I wonder whether to push out some sort of a warning to this incoming aircraft, and I hesitated over it because one doesn't normally fly around telling other pilots how to do their job. But in view of the fact that it might have been somebody who didn't know the area, I thought I'd better say something, so I just pressed the transmitter button and said, "Don't forget the television, that's Charlie Sierra." I didn't get any reply, and I wasn't really expecting one.
The first thing I remember is a person coming into the entrance hall of our transmitting station, his face speckled with blood, and saying there'd been a crash, and could we phone the police? I think, like I discussed with some of my colleagues afterwards, one of our reactions was, how on earth could he got a car up there that morning? And it was a few seconds before it dawned upon us that it was, in fact, a plane that had crashed.
The road was about 4 or 5 feet deep with snow. We set off, and it's really about a half an hour's walk from the corner of the road up to the television station, but it took us a lot longer than half an hour because the snow was so thick. The mist was dreadful. You couldn't see, or you could just about see your hand in front of you, and that's all.
We grabbed our stretcher and the first aid box and one or two blankets. It was foggy, of course, couldn't really see very much, but then, of course, we came across this airplane, and there were, you know, there were bodies all over the place. And
well, the great disaster, of course, in Manx history is Summerland, but a lot of the people that died in that were not Manx, they were visitors. That's not to say that Manx people were callous about the deaths. In fact, the Manx national conscience has been troubled ever since by guilt, because of the circumstances which caused the fire. But Winterhill was different. Everybody on board was Manx or was an established family member in the Isle of Man. And so it was a very, very Manx disaster. And the people who died, they would have involved family members running into hundreds. And as men working in the motor trade, they would be personally known to a great many people, beyond just simple family members. So virtually everybody in the Isle of Man took that right to heart. It was something which, I wasn't here, I was working in Manchester. However, there were a lot of national newspaper men and women from Manchester, and one of them from the Daily Express was called Esther Rose. And when she was here and sending a dispatch about the impact on the island of the crash, she said the Isle of Man was a teardrop in the Irish Sea. Nobody could have put that better or more strongly, because indeed it was. Everybody felt sad. And even at my distance away in Manchester, I felt it as well, because boyhood friends of mine were on board. Something like that really goes to the heart of the matter. And it was an unbelievably sad occasion. And you hope you never see the like of it again.
Well, everything was normal. I remember looking out over Blackpool Piers. One of them had been burnt down for, that, I think it was that year. And I was pointing out to the boys. Anyway, we went on a bit longer, and all I remember was taking a puff on a cigarette and never even felt a bump. And the crash investigators said they never found the seat that I was sitting in. Mm. Couldn't find any trace of it.
I think it was about 12 o'clock, sitting here with my father-in-law having lunch, that we heard there'd been an air crash from the Isle of Man. I just couldn't believe it. I sort of almost passed out with the shock. And I think it was about 4 o'clock in the afternoon when I actually did get news to say that he wasn't amongst the survivors. And my doctor, who was doing his rounds at the hospital that day, he'd heard it and found out that my husband was on that flight, and came home and came to me, because of course I was 5 months pregnant, and he was afraid that I might lose the baby. So of course from then on I don't remember an awful lot about it, because I was under sedation actually for quite a number of weeks.
And then in the morning I had a phone call to say that the Manx boat was coming in just before one to the Liverpool landing stage, and would I go down there where I'd be met and taken up to Winterhill to identify the body of my brother. And the scene then will stay with me for the rest of my life. It was just all these bodies with white sheets lying on the top of pews. And I was asked to walk down the side of one of these aisles and identify my brother. And I said to the young policeman, "My brother isn't dead, his eyes are wide open." And that stays with me.
I don't really know why it saved my life. I always believe that sitting at the back is the safest place. And I'm very thankful that I was spared. And sorry for the other passengers who didn't survive.
This is an island community. And even a small community, as you say, in rural circumstances, island communities aren't, well, they do tend to be introspective apart from anything else. And they're very, very closely knit. And there is a common bond, largely because, you know, you are thrown on your own resources. There's very little outside influence socially, comparatively speaking. So, no, for an island, that's why it bit so deep, I think.
It did change me. I became more serious. I certainly now am very aware whenever I hear of a disaster and things like that, your mind immediately goes back.
And we had such plans for the future. I thought the end of the world to come. I was so devastated.
Do you ever think about it?
All the time.
Veteran journalist Terry Kringle and the voices of some of the people affected by the Winter Hill disaster 50 years ago today. Tashugeshach le shachle Radio Vanning, Merenpeen, Bob Carswell. Sliawr ys dol i'n y cwtyn rys jai blina na gheis o chai, ta fe erfioch yn y gilga, ys jinnwi sigas on y tre rehit. A chynodder glid yn erfioch y fe on, gyn na eben gyn sgias, jay sia tans da ffyr al iei. Ta ffer al iei on, ys enna ffod y sint enna ta fe jintega, a sien Dewan MacNellan. Fast ydy dwi'n eisiau chai, chrwni Altonan yn sesach ilgach, dy ffeiliach na tyfei jintega, ons, as sgwyd y losio, pain y gilga, trogl as ren diwyn dy mŵa ons reicha, dy bech i gwller imida, eg yn sesach ilgach. On Sunday afternoon, there was a celebration of the work of John Crellin towards both the Manx language revival and the security of pain y gilga for the use of an sesach ilgach. At a gathering of Manx enthusiasts on Sunday afternoon at the old schoolhouse in St Jude's, fellow members paid tribute to the effort he's put in.
Brian Stoll, Secretary of Inchesif Gilga, the Manx Gaelic Society. Well, John's a retired farmer, a very much Manx farmer from the north of the island up here in around St Jude's in Andrus, in the parish of Andrus, and he's made an enormous contribution to Manx, to the language. He's been studying Manx for years and years, and he was largely instrumental, had a great part in acquiring the place we're in now, called Tain na Gilga, the Manx language house, because this used to be the local primary school in St Jude's, and it's still more or less in its original form as a country school. But he was able to get it uniquely for the Manx language for Inchesif Gilga over 20 years ago. But John was largely instrumental in getting that, and he's written stories in Manx and done and been a sort of great worker for Manx for many, for decades and decades really.
Well, my name is John Crellin, or we're normally known as Dewan. I first became interested because I was brought up on the farm here, and we had Manx field names, you see. Fields like Niveg, Bolly Ferrick, Trotterkinler, and so on. And it's these names which we used frequently when I was a kid that made me interested in the language. I thought, just imagine living in the country when these names were used regularly and the language is spoken regularly. What a wonderful place it must have been. And I started learning Manx with the few books available when I was at school. And then I went off, I had to join the Navy during the war, and I was still interested in the language then. And when I came back, as I say, I found this little band of people, Bill Pat Ratliff, Walter Clark, Charles Moore Crenn, and others who had been talking to the last of the native speakers. I started to teach it myself after a bit, as soon as I'd been acquainted with the lads who were learning it in the Ramsey Grammar School and the various pubs and so on. This was all right, but we had collections of books and things and nowhere to put them. We'd no official place to hold classes or anything like that. But then the Board of Education wanted to close St. Jude's School because of the lack of pupils, you see. They were down to about 12, I think. And I thought to myself, here we are. What about trying to get the school for a language centre? And we started a series of negotiations with my lawyer, Mr. Percy Wade, and the Department of Education. And after about 4 years, they decided to let us have it on a maintaining lease. And this was wonderful.
Fiona McArdle, and I'm a member of Anchesa Gilgach Limited, which is the company limited by guarantee, which runs Tyne Gilgach for Anchesa Gilgach, the Manx Language Society. It was fairly vital when we got it in 1986. It's held on a long lease at a peppercorn rent from the Department of Education. But before that, Anchesa Gilgach, as you know, publishes a large number of books in Manx Gaelic, and storing these in people's attics and barns was quite a problem before. So from that point of view, there's been a secure housing for all the publications of Anchesa Gilgach ever since then. It's also used, obviously, for meetings of the society itself. And certainly in the north of the island, it's been used by Banglen Tui, and they've held lessons here in this building, instead of various pubs in the north of the island, I have to say, for over the past 20 years. Not only that, it's used by other Gaelic-related groups. The choir Kyogri Tui practices here every week as well. And it's also a community-based hall. There's nowhere else since St. Jude's now. And now that the church has been saved, as it were, by the Friends of St. Jude's Church, they use it as their hall as well. So there are quite a lot of community events here too.
Yes, the Bun School is very important, and the whole attitude of the island and government changed. They realised that the feeling of the people is not so nationalistic as it used to be, and we want something to indicate our identity, you see. And I think government was quite happy to go along with this, and they've done a great deal in recent years to try and promote the language. I hope it prospers, because things are getting more and more difficult. There are more and more people coming over here from various countries, bringing their own languages and culture. And it would be nice to see Manx at least carrying on as a spoken language for as long as possible.
Celebrating the significant contribution to the support and growth of the Manx language made by John Crellin at Tyne Gilgach last Sunday afternoon. And 3 dates for your diary now. Next Saturday, the 1st of March, from 10 a.m. till 12 noon, Curtin Gilgach will be holding a coffee morning at the old schoolhouse on the main road in St John's. A chance to come along and have a couche in the Manx language and find out more about the language from Gilgairn, who will be present. And at 7:30 p.m. next Saturday, there's a concert in the Centenary Centre in Peel, with early music from Heartsease and the Talis Consort. Tickets, £7.50. And looking slightly further ahead, on Wednesday the 5th of March, there'll be an illustrated talk by Pat Newton, called Farms, Farmers and Farming in the North of the Island, Past and Present. And that'll be held at Tyne Gilgach, the old schoolhouse in St Jude's, Wednesday the 5th of March at 7:30 p.m, presented by Anchesa Gilgach, and admission will be £1.50. Well, that's it for this week's Seachlé. Mesen Vompín, Bob Carswell, Slednyak.